The holiday season has arrived and many people will celebrate Thanksgiving tomorrow. The holiday is synonymous with food and family and friends gathering together for a big meal. But for many Ohioans, food insecurity is a growing reality. It's estimated that nearly 1.4 million Ohioans are facing hunger, including many children. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll start by checking in with the leaders of two of our major food banks about the need they're seeing in the community, especially as food prices remain high. Then, while the holidays bring joy and cheer for most, they can be difficult for others, especially those dealing with grief and trauma. We'll talk to experts about how to emotionally navigate the holidays, and we welcome you into the conversation. First, the latest national and local news. It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanksgiving, more than any other holiday, focuses on food. Family and friends will gather tomorrow to celebrate with a big meal. But for a growing number of Ohioans, food insecurity and hunger are a reality. According to Feeding America, a nationwide network of food banks and food pantries, 1 in 8 Ohioans and 1 in 7 Ohio children are food insecure. The organization says that amounts to nearly 1.4 million Ohioans not having access to sufficient food. The Ohio Association of Food Banks conducted a survey in the spring of this year and found that among those receiving emergency food help, 2/3 had to make choices between buying food and meeting other household expenses. We're going to begin today's show talking about food insecurity in Northeast Ohio and how these banks are trying to help. Joining me in studio for the conversation are Kristen Warzoka. She is the president and CEO of the Greater Cleveland Food Bank. Welcome to you, Kristen.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And Katie Carver-Reed. She's the vice president of the Akron-Canton Regional Food Bank. Katie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to join the conversation, have a thought or a question, call 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org or you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. All right, Kristen, I'm going to start with you. Give us a picture currently in 2023 on what food insecurity looks like here in the greater Cleveland area.
Well, unfortunately, need for food still remains incredibly high. In our most recent fiscal year, which ended September 30th, we served as many people as we had in the first year of the pandemic. And that is very concerning, as you can imagine. There are a number of reasons for that. One is higher costs of living. You know, we know, and we've been talking with our neighbors in need who are just really struggling to manage higher food costs, higher rent costs, higher utility costs, and higher fuel costs all at the same time. And the part of the budget that gets strained or stretched is the food budget. And so they've been turning to the Greater Cleveland Food Bank, to food banks across our state, and to our partner agencies really in record numbers.
And Katie, inflation for your region, I mean, are you seeing it as clearly as Katie is when it comes to people's need and the reality of having to decide between food and other bills?
Absolutely. Everything that Kristen said is true at our food bank and in our 8-county service region as well. When looking at the data for this year compared to prior years, we're seeing more people visiting our network, even than during the pandemic, and a 30% increase in visits compared to last year alone. And when we go out and we talk to people, just like our friends at the Greater Cleveland Food Bank, do they tell us the same things, that everything costs more? Wages aren't keeping up with that, and so they're having to make difficult choices. But that's why the food banks exist, is to meet people in those needs when they have them. And so we're certainly grateful to be able to do the work, but you know, it's sad that it's as high as it is.
And what has been the role, if there is a diminishing one, of food-assisted programs that are being provided? I know there's been talk about, you know, at least ARPA dollars finally going away, and that's hitting lots of industries. any impact on what you do when it comes to that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, one of the most important hunger relief programs nationally is the SNAP program, formerly known as food stamps. And during the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone who was income eligible for SNAP at 130% of poverty or less had a bump in their monthly benefit to the maximum benefit amount. And frankly, it helped a lot of people. Folks had more money to spend at the grocery store on
groceries.
What
does that look like, dude?
Well, you know, in the case of a senior, their benefit could have gone from $50 a month to a few hundred dollars a month.
Oh, wow.
It really made a big difference for people. And in February of this year, because that was a pandemic era benefit only, the additional dollars came to an end. And, you know, the senior I mentioned, for example, would have gone back to their typical amount at a time that groceries are just at an all-time high. And so that certainly has also had an impact on many of the clients, but not all of the clients that we serve. It's just one more challenge to struggle with. And, you know, SNAP is our nation's first line of defense in the fight against hunger. For every meal provided by a food bank, all food banks together nationally, SNAP provides 9. So when there are changes to the SNAP program, it has a sudden and immediate impact.
I'll just add to that that when the pandemic era benefit ended, we started getting more calls from people asking where they could go to get food assistance, and we started seeing more visits at charitable food programs. At the same time that those other sources of government funding that were supporting food banks and other nonprofits in the community during the pandemic are going away for the organizations serving the community and for individuals as well. And so we're seeing this increase in need and less support to meet it.
Yeah. So what do you do? I mean, what is the scramble for food banks in order to, address this, you know, big gap?
We keep showing up and doing the work every day through the generosity of the community, people giving their time, people making donations. We're buying more food than we ever have. I'm sure that's true for Kristen, too, and she can talk about that. But we're having to buy more than ever because there are also still supply chain issues and a kind of rollover from the pandemic and the food supply chain. And so we're doing the best we can with the resources we have to meet this increase in demand.
And we're also expanding our capacity. You know, my fear is that this is not a short-term problem. Rising costs and wages that aren't keeping up appear to be a significant continuing issue. Seniors are living longer, they're trying to age at home, and they're running out of food. And so I think both of our food banks have been working to increase our capacity to provide more food across Northeast Ohio. The Greater Cleveland Food Bank opened a larger partner distribution hub last year so we can distribute more food to our 1,000 partners in 6 counties. A couple weeks ago, we opened a new community resource center. And I know that the Akron-Canton Regional Food Bank has been a leader in their region, expanding capacity as well. We're trying to really plan ahead.
Yeah, in July 2021, we opened a secondary facility to serve the southern part of our 8-county service region, and we're currently expanding the capacity at our main campus in Akron so that we can provide more food to the community.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have experienced food insecurity or know someone who volunteers for the food banks, we'd love to hear from you. 216-578-0903 or 866-578-0903. Or you can email us at soi@ideastream.org. So I'm wondering, you know, when you're talking about this greater need, you've hit on, you know, our seniors as being a population that's in dire need. What are other populations that you have seen really having to juggle when it comes to providing enough food for households?
Well, in addition to worrying about seniors, we worry a lot about working families and working poor families. Food banks can provide food to any household up to 200% of poverty. 200% of poverty is, for a family of two, is $36,000 a year, roughly, or less. And there are a lot of people who are not eligible for any other benefit because they're working, but they are eligible for emergency food, and we want to make sure that they have access to it. You know, we had literally the day before we opened our community resource center, we had a single dad and his 3 young boys show up in the lobby. Mm. He was working full time. His kids were between the ages of, I think, 6 and 11. And he was just beside himself because he had found himself in need of food for his kids. You know, he was trying to figure out how he could pick up a second job to try to increase his income.
And he's worried about childcare.
Oh my gosh, yes. As a working mom, you know, I can't even imagine having to pick up a second job to care for my kids.
Right.
And but that is a position that a lot of people are facing in our community. And we need to make sure that we're available and that our partner agencies have the food that they need when our neighbors turn to us.
And I'm curious, Katie, what you're seeing in the Akron-Canton area.
Again, I think that we're seeing a lot of the same things. And I think that, you know, what Kristen said is so important because when I talk to people in the community, I think it's a common misconception that people aren't working when they come and need support from a food bank. And that's absolutely not true. So many of the people we talk to are working jobs, trying to find second, or I've talked to people that have third jobs. I don't even know how you can have three jobs and do all of the other things that you have to do to make your life go around, right? And so we hear a lot about families working really, really hard and still needing support. And so I think what, you know, Krista mentioned about seniors is certainly a concern as well. But ultimately, I think what we continue to find in this work is that, you know, a lot of people are in need of food assistance, and it's not always, you know, the obvious people that you would think are in need of that assistance. A lot of people in the community are.
And then we've got Thanksgiving looming, you know, and people who do have the resources, you know, going out, doing their grocery shopping already, you know, thinking about big meals and you know, abundance. And for those who are struggling, I mean, how are the banks ramping up for Thanksgiving? Do you have specific programs that are helping the folks out there?
Absolutely. You want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we do a lot of work to support our hunger relief network. We food banks generally support lots of community organizations, nonprofits, faith-based organizations, churches in their ministries year round, but certainly for Thanksgiving. And so we have distributed lots of turkeys and lots of stuffing and trying to make sure that everyone gets to have that experience that you're talking about, to be around the table together at the holiday and get to experience that with your family. For me personally, I receive food from our food bank, and I got a Thanksgiving basket from our local Salvation Army. And I remember how important that was for me to have that sense of normalcy that my Thanksgiving was like everyone else's. And that's what food banks provide. We get to provide that experience as best as we can for so many people in the community because they deserve it.
Kristen?
Absolutely. So at the Greater Cleveland Food Bank, we were able to purchase back in April 17,000 turkeys, which we've been distributing to our partner network over the last, I'd say, month or so. You know, as you've both stated, the holiday, you know, Thanksgiving holiday in particular is a holiday that all seems to revolve around food. And so having a turkey, right, having a wonderful meal with your family is just, it's the center of this holiday, and we want to make sure that as many people as possible have the opportunity to have that experience. In addition to the turkey and other holiday products we've been providing to our 1,000 partner programs, we also do have some direct service to neighbors. And so, you know, last week we had a large-scale drive-through distribution in Cleveland's municipal parking lot. We served more than 4,000 families in one afternoon, 15,000 people. And we also have been doing some home deliveries over the last couple of days to homebound senior citizens, to folks who just can't get out to pick up the food that they need. And so I think we've done 700 home deliveries this week, again, of food for Thanksgiving.
Let's go ahead and take a call from Alan, who is listening and calling in from Cleveland. Alan, thanks for listening to The Sound of Ideas. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. By the way, first of all, I want to say thank you for every volunteer that helps deliver food to those in need. That's very helpful. Actually, my question, I was just listening, and I think it has ramifications of what I was going to ask. I'm a homebound senior citizen, food challenged, and my primary problem is that I'm transportation challenged. I don't have a car, and most of the food banks that are offering food, you need a car to get to. You know, I was hearing the marginal distribution there for over the years, and that's great, but I have no way to get there, and I'm just wondering if you have any plans to expand the homebound food delivery, especially to seniors. That would be extremely helpful.
Yeah, Alan, thanks for calling in today. We certainly know that there are many people in your position. And at the Greater Cleveland Food Bank, we have a help center so that if someone is in need of food and not sure how to access that food, you can call our help center and we will connect you with a resource. We may be able to add you to our home delivery program. So please do give our help center a call. We've got folks on the phones today and just about every day. The number is 216-738-2067. And I'd encourage anyone else who's out there who's in need of food in the Greater Cleveland Food Bank service area to use that line. Or if you're not homebound, go to our website. You can put in your zip code and it will pull up partner agencies near you. A lot of times people don't realize that there could be a church that's providing food right in their own community. But if there's not a big sign out front, and many times there's not, someone who's in need of food for the first time doesn't always know that it's available.
And Alan, if you have a hard time navigating that, you can just call back into the station and we'll get your contact info and we'll connect you with that help center contact information.
Yes.
We want to make sure if there's help out there, you should be getting it. And, you know, I mean, Alan speaks to a really important point. A lot of residents in Cleveland don't have cars.
Right. It's true. It is absolutely true. You know, we've done some surveying, and what we've found is that more than 90% of the neighbors who visit our network of food pantries have some sort of transportation. But that leaves 10%, which is a lot of people without. And so that's one of the reasons that we provide a home delivery service for folks who really don't have any other option. And sometimes we can come up with other solutions as well to try to make sure that people have access to the food that they need. It's really important. Our new community resource center is on a bus line, and that's something that we wanted to ensure because we know that we'll see seniors and other folks who are taking the bus, and we want to be as convenient as possible.
And I know, Katie, that the Akron-Canton Regional Food Bank has a number of rural counties in its coverage area. So when we're talking about access and proximity to resources, I mean, is that an extra challenge for your food bank? And how do you make sure that those individuals are you know, having their needs met and addressed?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll mention first, we also have a home delivery program, and I'm really proud that already this year we've done more than 20,000 deliveries directly to people in four of our eight counties, some of which are our rural communities, and we're really proud of that. Obviously, we have room to expand and need to expand that. So if anyone is in one of those rural communities and wants to volunteer to be a home delivery driver, we would love for you to join us in that volunteer effort. But for people living in rural communities, it is difficult. And in those rural communities, there's not public transportation. And so there's not the option to even take a bus to get to a local food program. And so we oftentimes talk to people that are having to rely on a neighbor to bring food to them or trying to get a ride. Also, proximity can be really hard in rural communities. People live farther out.
Sure.
And so having a central point can be difficult. But we've been working since the pandemic. One of the things we were able to do is purchase a pop-up pantry vehicle. And so we've been able to use that to go into areas and communities where we know that there aren't as many food resources as we'd like, or the proximity isn't as close as it could be. And so we're trying to bring more food into communities, and specifically some rural communities, through that effort.
We've got a listener calling in. John, calling in this morning to the Sound of Ideas. Go ahead.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Well, thank you. As well-meaning as some of these food banks may be, it's my feeling that they waste a lot of food in the quantities that they give out. You know, don't give someone 20 quarts of strawberries. You know, it may feel good, but a lot of it's going to go to waste.
All right, John, I appreciate your call. Happy Thanksgiving to you. I mean, how do banks approach portion size and making sure that they're giving enough to a family or an individual? But also, you know, I mean, conservation's important as well. So John speaks to a decent point.
Yeah, I think that, you know, something that is often not talked about in the world of food banking or people's understanding of food banks is that we also serve an important purpose to make sure that food goes to a better intended use than going to a landfill, right? And so it's really important to us that food goes to its intended use, goes to people that need it. I think in that particular example, I just had this experience the other day. I was out at a food program and I was talking to some women and they were talking about some fresh produce. We were talking about blueberries, actually, instead of strawberries. And a lot of times at our food programs, we encourage them to let people take what they need. And so if they want 20 strawberries or they need 20 strawberries, they can do that. And in this case with the blueberries, they were sharing recipes on how they could use that abundance to make jam that they could store for later. And so I think we try to encourage people to make the best use of what they have. And so if they're taking what may seem from the outside like too much or an excess quantity that might go to waste, oftentimes I found that the people that visit our network are extremely resourceful and do their best to make food stretch and last, and canning and preserving is one of those ways. And so again, trying to make sure that we're letting people take the items that they feel like they need, there's empowerment in that, and you know, letting them put it to good use.
I agree. And, you know, I've also seen over the years how many times a family or a senior or a volunteer will come to pick up for others. And so, you know, I happen to know that the very first car in line at our Muni Lot distribution this last week was someone who was picking up for four other families. And, you know, they had, you know, filed all the paperwork. We knew the families they were picking up for, but you know, what we put in the back of that person's vehicle was a whole lot of food because they were taking care of doing some home delivery, which is just wonderful. So, you know, things are not always as they appear.
We have just a couple of minutes, so let's go ahead and talk about the myriad ways that people can help, whether it's volunteering and maybe throughout the year as opposed to just in the holiday season, or what stuffs and food they can contribute.
Yeah, absolutely. So we always need volunteers. Volunteers, I think, really make the work possible. And so there are a lot of different ways to do that. People can volunteer at the food bank directly, helping to sort food and get it ready for distribution. They can help distribute to the community, like Cleveland's Muni Lot distribution or our drive-through distribution as well. People can help with home delivery volunteering, like I mentioned. So lots of different ways to volunteer. Certainly financial donations make a really big difference. Food banks are able to leverage our large scale to put those dollars to good use and stretch them pretty far to get a lot of food. And so financial donations are extremely important. And then I think also if you don't have time to do any of those things, right, I think just extending kindness to all of the people around you and helping to reduce the stigma that's associated with food assistance. Tell a positive story about somebody that's in need of help, because I think that helps food banks too. It helps the people that we serve to feel less alone and feel less stigmatized. And so people, anyone listening to this, can help us with that.
Absolutely.
Well said, Katie. The only thing I would add to Katie's great summary is that we also need folks to help us advocate. You know, this is a year where the Farm Bill is intended to be reauthorized. The Farm Bill not only funds SNAP, it funds product that food banks receive from the USDA, surplus purchases to support farmers that are distributed through food banks, WIC, and some other really important programs. And so when we have a strong group of advocates that are willing to share personal experiences or share their volunteer experiences or just share how important the issue of hunger is to them personally with our legislators, it's enormously helpful. And so we also encourage people to contact us if they'd like to help us advocate. That's something you can volunteer to do from home, to make a phone call or write a letter or send an email.
Well, my thanks to both of you, Kristen Warzoka of the Greater Cleveland Food Bank and Katie Carver-Reed of the Akron-Canton Regional Food Bank. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Food insecurity and food justice will be the topic of a free community discussion on November 29th at Morningstar Baptist Church. IdeaStream Public Media's Director for Engaged Journalism, Marlene Harris-Taylor, will host that panel discussion. The program is a collaboration between the City Club of Cleveland and St. Luke's Foundation. Time now for a quick break, but when we return, we're going to talk about surviving the holidays. Whether you're going through a rough time or just don't like the pressure the holidays can bring, we'll have that conversation. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll be right back. You're with The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks for staying with us this hour. As we enter the holiday season, it is important to acknowledge that for some, this time of year can be really tough to navigate emotionally, especially if you're dealing with loss, separation, grief, or isolation. The pressure to be joyful as well, from Thanksgiving to New Year's, is ever present, from the media to commercials, work and school, to your own family and friends. To end today's show, we're going to have a conversation about how to survive the holiday season, whether you are dealing with grief, isolation, or just indifference. And we've invited two experts from the Cornerstone of Hope to weigh in. Joining us, Mark Tripodi, founder and CEO of Cornerstone of Hope. Mark, thanks for calling in.
Jenny, thanks for having us this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And Julia Ellifrit, Education Director and Clinician at Cornerstone of Hope. Thanks so much for joining us as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And if you'd like to join the conversation with a thought, if you struggle through the holiday season and are willing to share, please call us 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org or you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. So, Mark, you dealt with a tragic loss about 20 years ago, which inspired you to start Cornerstone of Hope. Can you talk about your story with me and our listeners?
No, absolutely. I know in the beginning you announced Julia and I as experts, and I would say Julia is the expert, but my expertise in a sense has come through just my wife and I's and our family's personal experience. And unfortunately, we suddenly lost our three-year-old son back in May of 2000 to meningitis, and you never really prepared for that. It was sudden. It was, you know, in the emergency room one night thinking he had the flu, and in less than 24 hours we came home without our son. He had died, and it was like you're just never really prepared for that. And I know there's some people out there that deal with, you know, whether it be expected or unexpected loss, and it, regardless of the situation or the circumstances, it's just something that my wife and I certainly weren't prepared for, and in many ways it was just an absolute traumatic shock to our entire being. And that's as we navigated the holidays, even to this day, you know, it's 23 years later, this is still, in our family, one of the toughest times of the year. And I just want to give people that are, you know, like you mentioned in your intro, whether it be grief or isolation or just the family pressures, Julia can speak to this, like the holidays are a stressful time anyways, right? And then on top of that, you add grief or whatever families are suffering or going through, and it just, it's a catalyst for even more stress and difficult during the holiday times. And we've experienced that for many years.
Well, first, let me tell you how incredibly sorry I am for your loss. I just can't imagine anything more heart-wrenching. And so my heart goes to you in hearing your story, to both of you. You know, Julia, I'm curious, the first few holidays must have been, incredibly just difficult to navigate. How did that alleviate over the years?
Yeah, I think like Mark said, the holidays can be difficult anyway. The pressure to have the perfect Hallmark tree and the Hallmark experience with your family and all that, just in general, it's a stressful time. Add to that loneliness and depression and mental health concerns and divorce, and there's all kinds of stuff that can make the holidays really, really stressful. I think the loss of a loved one is the most difficult thing we can ever go through. So add that to a time when holidays are about tradition, and tradition almost always includes family. We always go to Grandpa's for Thanksgiving. We go to Colorado for Easter. Tradition always includes family. Well, when somebody in the family is missing, that just messes up all of our traditions in a lot of ways. And so I think that's what makes it difficult, because traditions always include family.
And really, Mark, I did want to hear your personal experience with this. So those first few holidays after you lost your child, it just, how did that get better for you?
No, absolutely. I would say this, and you know, in many ways, as I reflect back on my wife, Christy, and I, what we did, it was, it sounds like so sad, but I mean, it's really, I'm just being vulnerable with you right now. I mean, we did, when our son died, he was the middle of three children. And so we had our oldest was almost, that first Christmas was without our son. Our daughter was almost two. We had another daughter that was about six. And so we tried to put on a good front for them, right? I mean, we did the Santa Claus picture.
Sure.
And I can just remember it was just like one of the, it was hard. It was just so hard for us to even get them dressed up to try to go to a mall and even pretend that things were really happy and joyful, like Julia was mentioning. And I remember for many years, like literally when the kids would go to bed Christmas night, you know, after opening gifts and things like that, my wife and I would take down that tree. It would be on the front lawn corner for the city to pick up, like the very night of Christmas. And I know, you know, my gosh, that sounds awful. That sounds so sad. And but that's just, that's where we were. We just were trying to grind to get through it. And so I think, you know, but to kind of like over the years, being Christians, being Catholic Christians, we really have leaned into the reason for the season. I know that sounds so cliche, but that's we've added a lot of, I mean, for us, it's a, we've leaned in on our faith and celebrating Jesus's birthday and celebrating, you know, how we do things for one another down the during the holiday seasons in our extended family. And that's been a source of hope for us and what's brought a lot of meaning, even amidst the suffering for the years of, you know, again, celebrating the holidays without a loved one.
And you turned your deep sadness and heartache into something good, and leveraged that pain into founding the Cornerstone of Hope. So tell me when that kind of energy started focusing on maybe doing something new.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I always say, like, it was really born out of a mother's tears. My wife was a stay-at-home mom and taking care of the kids. And she felt like a prisoner in her own home, where I had somewhat of an outlet as a provider and going to work and had a little bit of diversion, you know, in my day-to-day week of working and providing. And so we probably had this thought within the first year, because we were a family that sought support immediately. My wife and I were looking to go to counseling. We were trying to find groups, not only for us, but for our kids. And it was difficult to find support. When we found it, it seemed somewhat unorganized or very expensive. And it was really born out of our experience of reaching out for support, thinking, oh my gosh, this could be done so much better. And we really, and I say this in a very serious way, like God put it on our heart to do something with that pain, to try to transform that pain into purpose, and to create a place where other people who had suffered the loss of a loved one, not just the death of a child, but whatever relationship that loved one had when they died. You know, we serve families a Cornerstone of Hope for families that have lost children, that have lost their spouse, whatever your relationship is with that loved one. We have a lot of programs that, I know I'm fast tracking, but that's what we did. We created a grief center based upon our own experience of, we kind of asked ourselves one question, you know, what would have we wanted if we were to ever to go through this again? And we're proud to say that Cornerstone of Hope has really evolved into that space in Northeast Ohio and Central Ohio, and even in the Lima community throughout the state of Ohio. So we have a lot of different programs, counseling, support groups, kids camps, retreats, memorial services, and even a lot more programs around the holiday times. We do an ornament workshop, a Christmas candlelight service, all to serve families who are suffering from grief after the death of a loved one.
And Julia, as someone who has decades of experience in the bereavement field, I mean, how do your clients talk to you about how the holiday season is particularly hard after experiencing loss?
Again, it's because so many times it's a family member that was an integral part of that holiday tradition. So what we talk about is really you have three choices with any tradition that you have. You can keep it exactly the same, mm-hmm. you can completely eliminate it, or you can change it. So if you always cooked Thanksgiving meal at your house, you can eliminate it and say, we're going to Aunt Susie's this year. Or you can change it. You can say, I'm opening up my house, but somebody else got to make all the turkey and the sides. or you can just keep it exactly the same. And for every tradition, you have to make that choice. Knowing that if you change your tradition, if you do not put a tree up this year, that doesn't mean that next year you can still put one up. It just means that for this year, here's what I have to do to survive. Because grief, again, affects us physically, mentally, spiritually in every way. And it's about surviving the holidays. It's not right now about thriving and going to the mall and singing Christmas carols. It's about how do I literally go from mid-November till January 2nd and survive it. That's the goal.
A lot
of people make a decision to get out of Dodge for the holidays. They'll go to Colorado skiing for the week of Christmas, or they'll go to Florida. And that's what many, many grieving people do. And that just, it's just too hard to be at home in the house and not have a tree. And there's no right or wrong. It's whatever you and your family need to do to survive.
Yeah, that's a great point. Let's go ahead and take a call from Josie, who's calling in from University Heights. Josie, thanks for listening to The Sound of Ideas and calling us this morning.
Good morning. As Julie just said, something that really hit home to me, and that's what I was going to say, is just like when I was young, my dad died, and so the traditions of Christmas and just died with him. And so I just, instead of like trying to change the holiday or anything, I just basically like eliminated it for 20 years and like didn't celebrate any holidays. Like I struggled really hard with that. And my mom did her best to try and make everything nice and fun. And we would do stuff on Christmas Eve, but Christmas Day, I just never wanted to be bothered. I just stayed to myself. I'm like, NBA plays basketball from noon to midnight, and that's what I would do. And honestly, now I married and I have two kids, and our whole goal is to change the traditions and add on to them now. Wow, sorry, I didn't. Hearing what she said really got me.
Oh, Josie, I'm so sorry to hear about that. I mean, is there a point now where it's gotten better for you?
It's so good now. It's so good now. My kids, like, I'm right now, I have my turkey. I'm about to start, you know, brining it. And we're having our whole family at our house. And I'm really just, like, trying to open up because I want my kids to at least experience the joy that I did have until my dad died. So it took a while, but I'm finding joy in the holidays again. But I just wanted to share that. But Julie, thanks for saying that.
I'm so sorry that you had that loss.
And do you find that, Julia, for a lot of people, it is just about time and going through your own grieving process and finding, that can evolve as well?
For sure. But time just ticks by. Time alone doesn't do anything. It's what you do with that time. It's the intentional feeling the sadness of grief. It's connecting with other grievers by being in a support group. It's what you do with that time that's important. But yeah, the first couple of years after loss, you're just numb. You're going through the motions. Things aren't a priority. You're just existing. And so you do need to get through that, those first phases. But again, I would say what you do with that time is really, really critical to the healing process.
Mark, I'm curious, did anyone, any of your friends or family, do anything that was helpful for you and your wife in those first initial years when you were, you know, kind of in an absolutely, I would say, dark place? Mark? Seems like we may have lost Mark. So I want to go ahead and play some tape from one of our own. The Sound of Ideas team had posted on social media that we were going to approach this topic about grief on the holidays, and a very familiar voice to our listeners came forward and said she'd be willing to talk about her extremely difficult year of dealing with loss. Karen Kassler had this voice message to give us.
I'm Karen Kassler. You've probably heard me on the air as the State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television. A year ago, my family got together for our first Thanksgiving without my mom. She had died only 2 weeks before. After 12 days in the hospital, she'd had surgery for a broken leg and never woke up. It was tough and draining, but we had food and drinks and even some laughs, and we made it through. What I didn't know is that 5 days later, my husband would die of a heart attack in the middle of the night. The world just stopped. I couldn't work. My son couldn't go to school. We had a Christmas tree with lights that my husband had put up, and that was it. All the traditions we look forward to, going to the Nutcracker, an annual auction for a charity we love, a family Christmas Eve party, all of that was just hollow. Instead of shopping for gifts and playing Christmas music in the car, I was planning two celebrations of his life, one here in Columbus and one in his hometown in New Jersey. Those actually turned out to be the best moments because I got to hear memories from people he grew up with, and I could look around and see the friends and family that he and I love the most. And those people, my family and friends, were my everything. They brought us food, checked in all the time, stayed the night, and they kept us going. And we kept that tree up through those awful dark weeks after Christmas with the lights on every night. This year has been hard and lonely. There are good days and bad days. The house is really quiet most of the time, and some nights can be excruciating. And I admit I'm bitter. My son is a senior, and his dad and grandma will never see him graduate and go on to college and whatever else is in front of him. And the holidays will never be like they were. I know I'm lucky to have wonderful people around me, and I do have happy memories of the holidays and other great times, which I know a lot of people don't. My heart is still broken, but it goes out to those who are suffering this and every year.
Mark, that was Karen Kastler from IdeaStream talking about those times when people were talking about her loved ones were some of the best of times, but the loneliness pervades. Does that resonate with you?
It does. I think that it speaks to grief being a journey. I mean, that's why we talk about it's just not a one life experience. When you go through the loss of a loved one, it's a journey. There are certain milestones. You know, she mentioned in that in her writing of, you know, that her husband will never see her son graduate from high school, or some of the other milestones that go on without your loved one. And that's why you know, we could confidently and safely say it's okay to grieve many years later, because I mean, even for us this day, I mean, we have a large family. We're grandparents now, and there's still that bitter. Every holiday, every birthday, every picture is always bittersweet. It's not as debilitating as it was in those as it was early on, but I can tell you, he's our son is thought about every day, just like you said, your colleague there commented. It's these are everyday losses that lasts a lifetime. And you can find purpose and meaning in life again. And I think, you know, part of it's okay to reach out for help. And, you know, we have a three-word mantra at Cornerstone, like never grieve alone. That's why all of our programs are geared toward, you know, for families to feel heard and to connect with others that are grieving. Because even well-intentioned family members who provide support and memories and stories, you know, a lot of times they're not going home to an empty house. And so we develop this family of grievers that come together and support with one another throughout the year and certainly during our programs.
So grief is something that you don't get over. Grief is something that you learn to live with. As Mark said, it's a destination. It's a journey. And so one of the things that's important to remember is that you could get over certain types of losses. You could get over somebody stealing your car. You can get over losing a job, but you don't get over people. You learn to live without them, and that's the goal. And so many times people think, I want my grief to get smaller and smaller and smaller over the years, and I don't think that's what happens. I think our grief stays the same because we're always going to miss that person. We're always connecting, but our capacity to hold that grief, we enlarge ourselves around it. We incorporate that person into our life, into our holidays, into our everyday existence. They move forward with us. We don't move on. We move forward with that person just in a different way.
Let's go ahead and take a call from Lori, calling in from Wadsworth this morning. Lori, thanks for listening to The Sound of Ideas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question was how, as somebody who's hosting, and I have a daughter who's now separating from her husband, we lost a grandfather, and my son lost his child, and we're pulling everybody all together. And how do I make room for the grief without allowing it to consume the space? And what can I do to facilitate them not having to deal with the happy expectations of the holidays?
That's a great question.
Julia, you want to go first? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you for being the host that recognizes that. I think that it's important to say people's names. And so many times I hear a client say, well, we don't want to bring it up because we don't want grandma to start crying. You know, grandma's thinking about it. You're not bringing up anything. Mm. But if we can just say, man, we really missed Dad this year, or Joey would have loved this green bean casserole I made. Anytime you can use somebody's name, makes it personal. It's a great thing to say, how you doing since Joe died, or how you doing since your husband died. Better to say, how you doing since Joe died, because you don't ever hear that person's name. I think if we acknowledge the grief that's in the room at the start of the holiday, yes, everybody's going to cry. It's going to be difficult, but then you can move forward with the holiday traditions in a much healthier, much more positive way. If you celebrate Christmas, I always recommend putting a stocking on a mantle for that person that you lost. And during the season, everybody write a favorite memory and tuck in that stocking. And then on Christmas Eve, as a family, you sit around, you read those stories, you laugh, you cry, you remember. And then you've done that grief piece. And then on Christmas morning, it's a little bit better. You can enjoy opening presents with the kids because you've taken a moment to acknowledge that grief and acknowledge the person that you've lost. That's so important.
Mark, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, no, I think, you got to make space, Lori, for sure. I mean, what you're questioning is, like, you don't want it to, you don't want to live in that grief. You might need to create a space to sit in it for a while that evening. And I know for my wife and I and our, we wanted to hear Bobby's name. We wanted to talk about it. So, that's something that it is. It's not like, oh, if I don't hear his name, I'm going to forget about it. That's not the case. I think you do create a space of some time for people to share memories and for people to talk about it. If there's a favorite dish that one of your loved ones enjoyed, I mean, you just say it out loud, like, oh, my gosh, this was the favorite dessert of so-and-so, or the favorite dish. And there's no right or wrong either, right? So I think just by you calling today shows your heart and your compassion of wanting to honor your loved ones that have died and gone before you. Just prayers for you and your family for all you're going through, for sure.
Absolutely. Let's take the last 4 minutes and talk about another aspect of going and surviving through the holidays. You know, I think there's people that just find it tough. Maybe they're not a holiday person. Maybe they feel more alone. And the lights and the presents and the commercials and everything shows this kind of idealized version of what the holidays are that can make it especially tough. We got a listener who tweeted, "It's the toughest time of year. Loads of nieces and nephews, but none of my own. I enjoy their joy, but I feel so distant." I think people can really feel othered by the holidays if they don't kind of live out that, idealized version of the holidays. So, Julia, do you have thoughts on that and how people can feel less alone in that?
Absolutely. The holidays, again, are stressful, especially during grief. I would say just a couple of reminders. One is holidays are always hard after a loss. So just remember to go easy on yourself. Don't put more pressure on yourself to have that perfect Hallmark holiday. Whatever day it is, Thanksgiving, Christmas, maybe a hard day, but you as a griever have survived hard days before. And you'll survive this one. Just remember that. You have permission to change your mind about plans, take breaks, change things up. You're not responsible for meeting anybody else's holiday wants at your own expense. So you have to take care of you regardless of everything else. And then guilt about enjoying holidays sometimes comes up in grief. People feel bad that they feel happy. But just remember, your connection to your loved one doesn't live in your pain. It lives in your love for them, and your memories and how they live on in your life. And that's how you want to celebrate them during the holidays.
And Julia, would you say not feeling pressured includes things like going to the parties or going shopping?
Going to the mall where they have Christmas music playing and everybody's happy in the hustle bustle. Don't do that. Order all your gifts online this year. Do whatever makes it easy and tolerable for you. Yep.
And Mark,
survival.
Yeah, I'm curious, Mark, do you think there are ways that people who are just kind of, you know, maybe not embracing the holiday season, how they can thrive during this time when so much emphasis is put on that?
No, I know. And a lot of times, with the tweet, you know, the caller that had texted or emailed in. I mean, it's, you know, it wasn't necessarily loss. It was just more loneliness and maybe not having their own family around. And I, you know, I it's a reminder to me again, as being a Christian, that this is not home. This is not heaven. You know, life is not perfect here. And it's, I wish that we could, you know, have that magic wand and wave it and like all of the sufferings and just the isolation and everything go away during this time. And sometimes it is just, I mean, it sounds, we just have to do everything we can to get through those holidays and remember that, you know, God didn't promise an easy life. He promised an eternal life. And there will be a day where, you know, whether it be whatever your favorite holiday is, that's what heaven will be times a million, right? When all this pressure and stress and isolation goes away. And so, and that's why for us and our family, like, you know, we've really kind of embraced Christmas, not in a secular way, but in a religious way, of the real purpose of it, that we have an opportunity, to just give all of our stress and our anxiety and our, struggles to our Lord and, you know, and His will be done ultimately, but my, you know, we're just, it's just a constant reminder that we're not made, you know, heaven is, or this earth is not perfect. And Mark, I think that's what your, yeah, person was experiencing for sure.
Mark Tripodi, founder and CEO of Cornerstone of Hope, and Julia Elifrit, education director and clinician at Cornerstone of Hope. I found this segment incredibly helpful, and I really appreciate you joining us for this conversation. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you. And to all of the people listening, you know, if you struggle through the holidays, we do have resources on our website. You can go to ideastream.org/SOI and know not to grieve alone. I thought that was a great thing that Mark said. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Jenny, thank you so very much. And we have programs. You can go to our website, cornerstoneofhope.org. We have an ornament workshop coming up and a Christmas candlelight service coming up as well. You can get information on our website. Thank you.
Sounds so good. If you missed any portion of this program, you can find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. You can hear a rebroadcast of this conversation tonight at 9 on 89.7 WKSU. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks for listening.